It's time for Chasing the Word on Compassion Radio. Hey, welcome back to our Chasing the Word series. We're jumping now into chapter 8 of the book of John.
It's about time. We took so long in chapter 7. Yeah. There's a lot of verses.
We're going to take a lot of time in each chapter because we want to explore them. The purpose of our Bible study, again, is to work out between the two of us how people can actually sit down and study the Word together and really dig into it and expect God to speak in and through each other so we understand the Word better, not just to get ideas, but to experience who God is in His Word.
One of the things that we do that I think might be important to let people know is we read the chapters ahead of time and then kind of get some idea of what's happening there. And we look up information about what's going on actually in the scenes that we're reading about. Chapter 7 was all about the Feast of Tabernacles.
Right.
We talked a little bit about that while we were going through chapter 7. But honey, why don't you just wrap up a little bit about what that was for and what it represented to the people of Israel?
Okay, a recap then. It's one of the three major pilgrimage holidays, like a week-long celebration, along with Passover and the Festival of Weeks. So they're spread out throughout the year. So those were considered to be the most important ones in a lot of ways because it was required then that males of the race of Israel would be physically going up to the city of Jerusalem to be part of this.
The scriptures that are typically used during this time are called the Songs of Ascent, and they start, I think, roughly in about Psalm 120 and go through their ascent up to the Temple Mount.
Now, when you talk about the ascent, everything for the Israeli people was an ascent into the Holy Land from where they started, because their very first act of crossing over the River Jordan and taking the city of Jericho was at some of the lowest elevation in all of earth. Mm-hmm. It's right next to the Dead Sea. So everything's uphill from there.
Right.
So if you sing a song of ascent, it's not just about where you're going literally that day. It's about your aspirations. We as a people aspire to the highest peaks of God's glory. Mm-hmm. And part of the obedience of going to inhabit the land was to bring him glory and to be with him there, and to take down the high places that where sacrifices to other gods happened, and destroy the works of the devil, and present a holiness that the land had never known. I mean, that was the objective. Abraham, Isaac had worked through the hills in their days and worked their way down to Egypt. This is a big deal because this is all of the hope of Israel. Remembers what it was like to finally come back and begin a new life in the land. And then everything was uphill from there. So we have these Songs of Ascent. There's two big things happened during the events of that feast. And that was, first of all, the carrying of the torches around the temple, which was to light all of these censers and these lamps to show that the Messiah himself would bring light to the temple. And at the very end, they would take water from Siloam Spring and carry it up and pour it out in the basin next to the altar to show that the Spirit of God would come to rest with them forever.
As living water.
As living water. And at the end of chapter 7, Jesus stands up at the last day of the feast and says, I'm that living water again, saying, I'm God.
Another I am statement.
And it's unnerving to those who have to hear it from the temple because, again, here he goes shooting off his mouth. He must be a madman because nobody says this.
Yeah.
Only God has the right to say this. And here we are jumping into chapter 8. The very first thing that happens is Jesus says he wanted some solitude.
Right.
So he said a big thing. He knows he's shaken the foundations of the world again. So the Spirit of God says, step aside. Let's talk about this. So he goes to the Mount of Olives. Let's read chapter 8.
So Jesus is on the Mount of Olives, and in verse 2, he comes down at dawn back to the temple complex. All the people were coming to him when he got there. He sat down and began to teach them. Then the scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman caught in adultery, making her stand in the center of the circle. Teacher, they said to him, this woman was caught in the act of committing adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. So what do you say? They asked this to trap him in order that they might have evidence to accuse him. Jesus stooped down and started writing on the ground with his finger. When they persisted in questioning him, he stood up and said to them, the one without sin among you should be the first to throw a stone at her. Then he stooped down again and continued writing on the ground. When they heard this, one by one, they left, starting with the older men. Only he was left with the woman in the center. When Jesus stood up, he said to her, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? No one, Lord, she answered. Neither do I condemn you, said Jesus. Go, and from now on, do not sin anymore. I know you want to continue to the next story in this.
Yeah, I think we can cover two stories from this chapter.
But I really would like to talk about this before we get lost in the other part of it.
What's your big thought on that story?
Well, I'm a woman.
And I'm glad for it.
Yes. I just see such compassion from Jesus here. We don't know any more about this woman than what we're reading here. Mm-hmm. Some have assumed that maybe it was Mary Magdalene or Mary of Bethany or someone else in Jesus' group of followers, but we don't really know. And I just think that she's a pawn in mm-hmm. this whole story.
Certainly.
And we get that from what we're reading here, that they were using her to trap Jesus. But I just wonder which one of these men was actually with her committing adultery and brought her to the forefront of this, you know, accusation. Why wasn't that man also accused? Because it takes two, actually, to commit adultery. That's an important point of this story that is left out of this narrative.
Well, you said something important there. It takes two to commit a crime that requires two. And yet the law only speaks to one.
Mm-hmm.
You can't condemn two people at the same time of the same crime. Here we are left with a convenient thing for the lawmakers to do, mm-hmm. which was to ignore the sin of those who oppress others, which is the big sin. Her story could very well have been that she didn't have any power and was caught in a triangle of some kind, and maybe
trafficked.
The person that she was with was trafficking her to somebody else. The law did not distinguish between those who were being trafficked and being oppressed and those who willfully scorned the law and the heart of God.
Mm-hmm.
Consider, too, that this happens the very next morning after the Feast of Tabernacles, which is the Songs of Ascent. All the aspirations of what the holy people of God should go to has now rested. It's the Sabbath day after what's happening in those festivals. And mm-hmm. Jesus chooses to step right back in the middle. And what are the temple officials after? Business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
They've forgotten the Songs of Ascent, and they're back to wanting to trap an innocent man, and they don't care who gets hurt on the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary.
Yeah.
Because all of the things that we're supposed to be aspiring to are being completely ignored and shut down just minutes after midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. It is indicative of how sick the society was.
Yeah.
And Jesus addresses it with a kind of quietude that goes back to the heart of the Songs of Ascent.
Mm-hmm.
What are we really trying to become as a people, as servants of a living God? And he lives it out in this scene.
Yeah.
It's quiet. It's not rude. It's not boisterous. But it sees exactly everything around him as it really is.
Mm-hmm. I always wonder what he was writing in the dirt,
yeah.
You know.
I think about God just being on the ground touching the earth.
Mm.
I think about him being there when the Israelites first step across and circle Jericho and began the invasion that would give them the land. Was God walking the ground at that time, touching the ground, remembering a future that would be different because mm-hmm. of the sins that had been before being wiped out and the ugliness, the demon worship that was happening in the land being purged? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know he does because he's touching the ground that he's making holy.
Mm. I find it interesting, too, that one by one, these men left, starting with the older men.
Yeah.
And I read a commentary about this scripture one time that it said, perhaps they were considering their own sin.
Mm. Well, and how could they not?
And it was at the forefront. And there was wisdom in that, that they would leave first. So,
and maybe hoping that some younger hotheads would take care of the dirty business for
maybe
them.
Maybe so, maybe so. Well, I want to continue yes. with verse 12, but I just wanted to highlight that the compassion of Jesus toward this woman so moves me every time I read this yeah. story that I think, you know, there's nothing that we can't come back from. And Jesus is giving her a future and a hope here.
And Jesus sees the big picture. He sees in her the entire people,
mm-hmm.
oppressed and without a shepherd. And so he has compassion on those who are suffering. You know, we didn't think about this world we live in now. How easy is it for us to snap right out of a glorious experience, something spiritual or worshipful, and the next day snapping right back into legalism,
mm-hmm.
looking down on somebody for something, or jumping back into our culture wars.
Well, how many arguments are had on the way home from church?
Yeah, even that fast.
So just,
yeah, scary thought.
You know.
Going on.
Okay, verse 12. Then Jesus spoke to them again in the temple. I am the light of the world. Anyone who follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. So the Pharisees said to him, you're testifying about yourself. Your testimony is not valid. Even if I testify about myself, Jesus replied, my testimony is valid because I know where I came from and where I am going. But you don't know where I come from or where I'm going. You judge by human standards. I judge no one. And if I do judge, my judgment is true, because I'm not alone, but I and the Father who sent me judge together. Even in your law, it is written that the witness of two men is valid. I am the one who testifies about myself, and the Father who sent me testifies about me. Then they asked him, where is your Father? You know neither me nor my Father, Jesus answered. If you knew me, you would also know my Father. He spoke these words by the treasury while teaching in the temple complex, but no one seized him because his hour had not yet come.
I know there's some significance in being by the treasury when
Must
this is
be.
Happening,
yeah.
But I don't want to explore that in this particular broadcast. But interesting here that Jesus admits that he can't really play by the same rules. For example, if you were in a group and someone came and accused you of a crime, let's suppose someone comes to you and they want to beat you up. You'd look weak to them. In Jesus' case, he sees things people don't see. The Spirit is all around him. His Father's at his back. The entire authority of heaven is always with him, and it can't not be because he's the Son. Mm-hmm. He's basically saying, I'm above the rules, and I know it's hard for you to comprehend this, but I don't even give testimony of myself because I don't need to. It makes no sense to testify to something, to try to prove myself right when I already am truth. Mm-hmm. I don't just say truths. I don't just speak honestly. I am honesty. I am truth. I am. Mm-hmm. And so when he says those things, what do you do with that? Because here's a guy sitting across the table from you acting like he owns the place because he does. Mm-hmm. And they're just not grabbing that yet.
It's interesting how you talked about the Feast of Tabernacles, how they take the torches and they go around the temple. They begin to light these big candelabras to signify the Messiah coming, being the light of the world. And then right after the festival is done, he comes back the next morning and says, I'm the light of the world. You lit those torches to signify the light of the Messiah. That's me.
And I'm the water of life.
Mm-hmm.
Both the big symbols of that festival, he's saying, I'm those things.
Yeah.
And they're all metaphors, but I'm the reality. For 78 years now, we've depended on the faithful encouragement of friends just like you to bring this unique radio and media ministry to the air each day. You can drop us a line, ask a question, submit a prayer request, or download a free Bible study guide in just the same way. It all happens at CompassionRadio.com. This dynamic gospel is available to you in a handy paperback edition, and I'd love to send you one when you send your gift and ask for it. Remember, this is a 100% listener-supported ministry. If you've never supported us before, would you consider doing so this month? I know many of you can and want to give more, so I'll not be shy in asking for that support. Thank you for seriously considering this request and challenge. Our toll-free order line is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. If you need to call early or late, that's okay. Just make sure to leave your name and phone number, and we'll get back to you immediately when the doors open each business day. You can also give anytime online at CompassionRadio.com. And if you prefer to put a stamp on it, you can always find us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. God bless you as you stretch your faith this year of 2021. I hope we can be a real encouragement and challenge to you for many, many years to come. And make sure to ask for your own copy of The Dynamic Gospel when you contact us today.
Let's turn now to The Dynamic Gospel and read this same passage.
And we'll read it from the beginning through verse 20 straight through, and then we'll wrap it up together. Chapter 8. At the same time, Jesus sought solitude on the Mount of Olives. As soon as it was daybreak, Jesus was drawn back to the temple sanctuary, and the people were drawn to him. It wasn't long before a large crowd had seated itself, waiting expectantly. Jesus sat down with them and opened his mouth to teach. Even as he shared from God's heart with the people, the temple record keepers and those pesky fundamentalists dragged out a woman and threw her down on the ground at Jesus' feet. With utter disdain, they loudly proclaimed her to be an unfaithful woman, caught in the act with someone who was not her husband. They spared none of the juicy details, making it very clear to Jesus how guilty she really was. There was no way she was getting out of this. If we read the law correctly, which we certainly do, they pompously stated, then Moses says the woman should be stoned to death without delay. What do you say? These officials knew what a soft spot Jesus had for these lowlifes. They were testing him. They figured there was no way out from a, quote, righteous punishment. Jesus acted like he hadn't heard them. He just leaned over on one elbow and started doodling in the sand with his other hand. The officials, growing angry, berated Jesus. Well, what do you say? Jesus stopped doodling, sat up, and cleared his throat. You'll get no argument from me. Just do it the right way. If you're going to throw righteous stones, then righteous you'll have to be. So, whichever one of you has never screwed up once in his life, he gets the first strike. Without so much as a glance around, Jesus returned to his doodling. That deflated the gas bags. One at a time, starting with the ones old enough to know better, they sheepishly dropped these righteous stones and skulked away. The long, hovering shadows disappeared one by one. The angry circle had cleared, and there was no one left but Jesus and the terrified woman. After a while, Jesus stood up and brushed off. He looked around. So, ma'am, where'd the lynch mob go? Did no one stick around to be the executioner? She finally got up the courage to answer, though staring straight at the ground. Not a single one of them is left, Lord. Jesus opened his palms. I didn't come here to throw stones. You're pardoned. Go on. It's time to prove how wrong they are to condemn you. From now on, live a different way. You've been given a new lease on life. Jesus continued his teaching right where he left off. Whether the world wants it or not, I'm the one shining true light into the darkness. Now you can stop stumbling around in the pitch black. Follow me and I'll lead you out of death into real life. And you'll be a beacon to others. Hogwash, said the fundamentalists, who were still hanging around. You say you're the light of the world. You've got nothing with which to back it up. What a liar. Oh, really? Jesus replied. You don't think I know what I'm talking about? You think you've got it all figured out? Fine. Then you tell me where I come from and where I'm going. I'm sure the crowd would like to know. Nothing? You've got no clue what I'm capable of. You hotheads are so quick to condemn other people. I find it wise to refrain from judging anyone presumptuously. Oh, the time will come for a verdict, all right. And when it does, there'll be no disputing my calls. The Father will be right there backing me up. Remember him? You know, the one who sent me? Or have you forgotten that the law clearly states the combined testimony of two witnesses establishes the fact? Of course I can't speak for myself. From what I've seen already with my own two eyes, I've got plenty I could say. And word for word, detail for detail, you'll find the Father backs me up 100%. So, countered the officials, arms crossed, where is this Father you speak so adamantly about? Is he going to step up and defend you right now? Jesus just shook his head in weariness. If you weren't so completely blind to the obvious, you'd have figured it out by now. Perfect evidence that you really never knew him to begin with. If you can't figure me out, he'll forever remain invisible to you. The religious leaders grasped none of it. They were probably deafened by the sound of clinking coins, for Jesus made these proclamations directly in front of the temple money room. Still, they couldn't figure out a way to finally do away with him. In God's great plan, it still wasn't time.
I think maybe the significance of him being by the treasury is that they believe that that's close to the court of women. Mm. Otherwise, they couldn't have brought this woman in there.
Very possible. That makes sense.
If he was in a different part of the temple.
And if he tried to step into the outer courts and speak just to the men, that'd be a different thing. He always seemed to be in a place where he's speaking to everybody. Mm-hmm. And so that meant going outside. Mm-hmm. Anybody who actually wanted to hear him, of course. All the more religious, more haughty people were inside the inner courts doing their business. Away from all the rabble. Mm,
yeah.
So that's an important point, honey. Any closing thoughts on both those stories?
Well, I just see Jesus showing two sides of his personality here. He shows a very tender, compassionate side of his personality when he encounters this woman who is obviously desperately terrified. You know, she's in a very bad spot. He has such compassion for her. He doesn't have that same level of compassion, or he doesn't show it in the same way toward these temple officials. And, you know, we know that God loved these men, these temple officials. He loves his children. Yet he shows here, through the words of Jesus, a very sharp rebuke for them. And I think we have to be careful which person we're going to be, which team we're on here. Are we going to be on the team that knows it all and we think we have the answers and we're going to condemn those around us because they're not doing things the way we think they should be done or because the way the law says they should be done or the Holy Scriptures even, what we think the Holy Scriptures say?
The Apostle Paul says it really well later in Corinthians. He says, you know, you could have everything right, be perfect in every thought. You could sing like an angel and without love still be completely lost.
Yeah.
Jesus is making that very obvious.
Or on the other hand, are we going to be like this woman who has obviously been caught in sin and humble ourselves before God, knowing the evil that we've committed or knowing the hurt that we've perpetrated on others or knowing the things that we've been caught up in, even that are ugliness? And just sit in the dirt with Jesus.
I think God knows very well that every time we're, quote, caught in sin, it's so very rarely just us.
Yeah.
We're not just caught up in our sin. We're caught up in others' sins. Think of every child that becomes an offender because they were abused all their lives by parents who feared not the wrath of God or the law.
Mm.
People that get addicted because they were in such painful circumstances and abused for so long that they turned to the only relief they could find in drugs or alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Taking drugs, getting drunk, committing crimes because you're addicted to something, they're all sins. But are they only their sins?
Mm.
Jesus, I think, sees through all of this and knows the lineage, the history, the ancestry of sin.
Absolutely.
And he addresses all of that and frees the person from the burdens of the past.
I like how you put it in the dynamic gospel that she's been given a new lease on life. Yeah. And I think that's exactly what Jesus does for us. He comes in and he sees where we really are. And our life is laid bare before him. He says, I don't condemn you. I love you. You've got a new lease on life. Turn over a new leaf.
And that's what he's telling to both of these crowds. He literally frees a woman from her condemnation, the consequences of the judgment against her sin.
Mm-hmm.
She literally is living to see another day. That's pretty dramatic.
Right.
But he's also showing the way for the rest of those who are still caught in a sin they have not been called out on.
Mm-hmm.
He sees sin everywhere he looks. But he doesn't just look through the sin to the person. He looks at the person in the context of all the sins that they have to steep in.
Yeah.
This world is full of sin, and we're called to go to him, not away from the sin or get our lives together before we come to him. We're called to go to the only one who can really, truly free us from all of that. Mm. And he's freeing them right where they are in the presence of their enemies.
Mm.
He said earlier in the Gospels, as recorded by the other writers, blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. When these fundamentalists come right back and have zero mercy on the one who's been oppressed, this woman who's been singled out and been made an example of, he turns right back around with their same standard, not because he likes that standard, but because he has to show it for what it is.
Right.
I believe that's why he did that.
Mm.
And he called it out in front of those who needed to know that they had a valiant knight standing for them, a liberator who could shake off the shackles. So we come to the end of that first couple stories in chapter 8. I'm so glad, friends, that you joined us for this episode. And we'll see you on next Monday's program for part 2 of chapter 8 in the Dynamic Gospel series here on Compassion Radio. Thanks for joining us.
I'm coming back to the heart of worship, and it's all about you. It's all about you, Jesus. I'm sorry, Lord, for the thing I've made it. When it's all about you, it's all about you, Jesus. Every single breath, I'll bring you more than a song, for a song in itself is not what you have required. You search much deeper within, through the way things appear. You're looking into my heart, yeah. And I'm coming back to the heart of worship, and it's all about you.
God bless you as you stretch your faith this year of 2021. I hope we can be a real encouragement and challenge to you for many, many years to come. And make sure to ask for your own copy of The Dynamic Gospel when you contact us today. Remember, none of this is possible without you. If you believe hearing the good news from the front lines of faith builds your faith, then let us know today. Just call us at 1-800-868-2478. Write us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859, or make your gift through our website, compassionradio.com. We need you, friend, so contact us today.